Is it a crisis? Hi, I'm Jarvis Smith, and my new show, Lean Into Clean, will inspire, impress, and inform. What can we all do to clean up our lives so the next generations and, of course, our beautiful planet can thrive? Perhaps we've all lost our way. Lean Into Clean will showcase how we might remember, refocus and restore the natural way so we can again live in balance and harmony with life on Earth and all its inhabitants. We're gonna save the world tonight. Hello, hello, I'm Jarvis Smith. This is Lean Into Clean on UK Health Radio. Just to let you know, I've had to re-record this intro part due to some technical issues we had live from Dubai at COP28. So I'm going to start with the news, as I always do. So, of course, COP28 has to be the news this week when it comes to my subject matter, Lean Into Clean. So there's been a lot of controversy this week about the COP president. There's been a lot of press saying that he's been trying to negotiate oil deals with international state heads as they've been coming to COP for the negotiations, and also that he's trying to again soften the wording around the agreement to phase out fossil fuels. So of course we don't know at this stage actually what's going to happen, because we're still right in the middle of the proceedings. So I just wanted to give a bit of personal opinion on this. I've actually spent time now in the last few days with royalty, with the Green Sheikh Abdul Aziz, who is the nephew of the royalty in the state of Ajman, which is one of the seven states of the UAE. And, you know, having a personal ear with royalty, with the decision makers of a territory, of an area, you get to understand why some of these decisions are made. Now, I'm certainly not saying that we need to continue to use oil at all, but of course we can't stop using it today. This is the problem. If we suddenly turned off oil today, then most people's electricity would be gone. So I think what he's trying to say is that there is no science that proves that we need to phase out fossil fuels. Well, that I absolutely disagree with. I think there is plenty of scientific evidence to that effect. But more importantly, I think it's to do with the way that they want to do it. So what he's saying is that the oil, certainly that comes from that country, is gathered and collected in one of the most sustainable ways in the world, if not the most sustainable way in the world. And then in order for people to continue their lives in the way that they're living it and transition to a renewable energy, we need to very slowly phase out oil and very quickly bring in renewable energy. So that's the kind of overview, which I kind of agree with, because there is no magic wand or silver bullet. So that's just my little uptake on the news. But I did actually spend time, as I said, with the royalty, the Sheikh. Green Sheikh, should I say, Abdul Aziz, as you know, he was on the show last week, and really got to see some deeper insights to the way the country operates, its philosophy, how inclusive it is, etc. So I think we've got a lot to learn from the Arabic way, particularly the UAE. Now that brings me nicely onto today's guest. I actually met this guest, bumped into him at COP28 in Dubai. He is the most extraordinary individual, full of passion, full of life. He's a biologist, he's a photographer, and he's just a really good guy. And here's our conversation that we had live whilst I was in Dubai at COP28. Neil Zava.
I lost connection with you then for a moment, Neil, but I am back, and hopefully you can now hear me again. I'm so sorry about the disruption today. Neil, what has been, in your opinion, one of the most important messages that needs to be gotten out, you know, to the masses? Certainly, you know, the people that might have the same kind of outlook on life as you, the people that connect with you, what is it that you feel that they need to understand, and what is the message that you'd like to get out to them for them to make some real changes?
For me, I believe that with the scope of climate change, it affects a cascade of things that we don't realize are so interconnected. And oftentimes, particularly something that I hope that we can branch out in today is the scope of the problems that are being targeted for resolution at COP really tend to be top level problems, in the sense that we want to stop and limit this 1.5 degree Celsius temperature increase between now and 2030, with a massive push on wanting to cut down fossil fuels and our emissions and transition into green energy. But what does that mean in the sense of what is the future of green energy, and how are we actually utilizing the materials of Earth today to get to that point? And are we in fact creating more problems for humanity that are actually linked to that by causing by adding to the beneficial reduction of emissions? Are we in fact causing humanitarian problems by not responsibly sourcing materials and working with Indigenous peoples and communities internationally to understand how they're really truly being affected by something that is a global problem?
Amazing, amazing. And what do you think the problems are currently? What do you think the biggest issues are in terms of the way that you've studied and experienced?
I'd love to mention something that Simon Stiell, I think from UN Climate Change, who recently spoke about, he spoke about this terminal decline required in our resilience of fossil fuels, and in turn their produced emissions. He said that we're welcoming our own decline, and he raised these thoughts towards the delegates at COP28 that there are human lives and communities that depend on them and the actions they take at COP28. But as I mentioned before, we're working towards this top level problem, and we're working towards climate action, but it shouldn't come at the cost of human lives. And I would love to link this currently with what's happening in the Democratic Republic of Congo with a compound called cobalt. And cobalt is used in the batteries of most modern electronics, from your phone to your smartwatches to vapes. But more importantly, it's critical to the low carbon economy. It's also instrumental in in the development and facilitation of electric vehicles and energy storage technologies. So for electric vehicles in particular, cobalt is found in three out of the four major lithium-ion batteries on the market: lithium cobalt oxide, nickel manganese cobalt, and nickel cobalt aluminium, with lithium iron phosphate the only one lacking. And the global cobalt supply is actually designated high risk because fragile countries host the majority of this cobalt reserve and production. You may thinking like, oh, like what has this got to do with like human rights, and how is this being affected by green energy? But so the Democratic Republic of Congo holds 50% of the world's reserve of this compound called cobalt, with the rest of the 50% in less significant reserves around the world. Now, the DRC, they produce 40 to 60% of the world's sourcing of cobalt. And cobalt itself is not the problem. The problem is lying with exploitative practices that are set to get so much worse in the upcoming years. As of today, right now, there is deep human rights violations taking place: child labor, violence, sexual assault, forced evictions. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are people in the Congo burning themselves alive to get this message of the horrors they are facing out there. And the media and the world continue to fail them day after day. There are growth forecasts that state that the entire lithium-ion battery chain could grow by over 30% annually until 2030, reaching a value of more than $400 billion. That's roughly a 250% increase between now and 2023, which will have horrific impacts on the Congolese people if we don't act now.
Yeah, I mean that it is. I mean, it's devastating to hear it. It's heartbreaking. How can people listening actually, work out a way to be able to support and become a solution? Because currently it seems like nearly everything and every one of us is actually part of the problem. What would you suggest?
We have three routes we can go down from this point. We can start demanding change towards the responsible supply of cobalt. And a big part of that is, for example, this radio show, working to get the message out there, to then work in alignment with companies such as the Global Battery Alliance and the Fair Cobalt Alliance, formalizing, replicating, and scaling the mining industries associated with green energy battery production towards more safer and sustainable practice that do not come at the cost of lives. And secondly, we can start the shift to alternatives. The research suggests that there's a plethora of better alternatives to cobalt usage in lithium-ion batteries. There's aqueous zinc ion batteries, sodium-ion batteries, potassium-ion batteries, even new innovative supercapacitor technologies, which hold the promise for utilizing more responsibly sourced materials for green energy. And within these alternatives, they offer a huge potential solution to address the environmental and ethical concerns associated with our current reliance on cobalt and in lithium-ion batteries. But they have to be funded and regulated. Governments, businesses, and peoples have to be the one demanding change in the current sourcing and future of how we adapt to green energy. So truly, it comes from us. It is circular. It's in the sense that the production of these products are only there to reach the demand that's being met for it. So this push, this massive push for green energy, is saying, oh, we need to have this 250% increase by 2030, is going to cause these cascades of problems. But there needs to be something from the ground up saying, wait, hold on, where you want to reach this green energy solution, but people are dying for your current solution based on your current operative strategies. And the only way that governments and businesses are going to listen is if people demand the change. The people that are effectively ending up with the products in their hands, their phones, their laptops, their electric cars. Or
Yeah,
thirdly,
it's
we
a
can do nothing. We can give up moral responsibility and, in effect, in humanity, and just let them work towards climate change, only securing a future for Western nations.
amazing, amazing. Neil, we're going to have to cut to a commercial break. Stay there. I'm going to come back to you shortly. We're going to cut to the UK Health commercial break now.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
So, Neil, welcome back. I'd like to, before we start any more conversation, before you come on the show, I always ask my guests to give us a couple of songs that have inspired you or would potentially be a soundtrack to this thing that we are calling a climate crisis. You've chosen a couple of songs. Do you want to tell us which song we're going to play first and why you've chosen that song? And then we'll play the song and everybody can get to hear
I have chosen
it.
Environmental Anxiety by Ray. And I think she perfectly embodied the scope of feelings around the environment and climate change at the moment. Lyrically, she pretty much hit the nail on the head as to what the zeitgeist is really about, this feeling of helplessness when it comes to climate from the general public. And she did it in a way that really makes you feel connected with other people that are also facing the struggle of being like, we want to make change, we want to implement change, but what can we do about it? Like, this is what's going on, and this is how I'm feeling.
Amazing. Let's hear the song and we'll talk about how it makes you feel at the end.
It's also weird as fuck. Cool.
Ah, what a fantastic song, Neil. Why did you choose that song, and how does that song make you feel?
I think it makes me feel seen. It makes the experiences that I feel with my own climate anxiety and environmental anxiety feel vocalized by her lyrics. There's so many points that she touched upon that it's like, oh, we have this hope, and yet we keep crushing it, and our problems seem to cascade and continue. And it gets to feel overwhelming at times. But I feel like the premise of the song, really, the way that I interpret it, is that we as a collective, we have this feeling, but it shows that it's because we care and we want to see a brighter future for us and generations to come.
Nice. Doesn't get more poignant than that. So let's talk about you, personal life. What are you doing in your own world? What are you doing in your family environment to really make a difference? What sustainable tips could you give our listeners?
That's an interesting one. I've definitely had a few debates within my own family and friend structure about changes we can make. Again, I think it all falls back into this idea of imperfect sustainability and the small changes we can make. I think that people can be reliant on old habits. For example, even some such things as purchasing large plastic bottles of water and small plastic bottles of water in the way that they utilize plastic in their daily lives, whether it can be cosmetic tubs or things like hair products, anything. It could be anything within that scope. And it's just about finding ways that you can make simple changes that can make huge impacts in your life. So I would tell my parents, who were so reliant on plastic bottles, just switch to a metal one, use the tap. You don't need to continuously buy new plastic bottles and send them off for recycling, which recycling, yes, it's fantastic, but it also consumes huge amounts of energy. And you can actually only recycle a product so many times. When it comes to cosmetic products, for example, you purchase loads of creams that you use on the daily and hair products that you might use every single day, but you can find alternatives uses of refill tubs, for example. There's loads of stores that now do refill tubs where you can buy a product that sells the baseline and you can come up, use your tub, send it back to the store, and then get it refilled. And then you're taking out so many products that will end up in landfill or end up in the bottom of the ocean, for example, where they're, well, yes, they are effectively breaking down within 300, 400 years, but they're breaking down into microplastics, which were then ending up in our water streams and we're consuming. Our bodies are actually filled with microplastics. I don't think many people know that. And then that causes a cascade of health problems. It's like I always say, every action you have is so interlinked with so many different aspects of humanity. From the second you pick up that product on the shelf, it could end up in your body. And you don't think about that. You don't think about the longevity of the product like that. Even when it comes down to our fashion, one thing that I did for me and my family was to stop our large reliance on purchasing clothes multiple times a year, and instead of looking for other alternatives like purchasing clothes from Vinted or eBay or using charity stores instead of going to commonplace stores like Primark, where things may be associated with mass production or potential foreign slave labor. So it's just having these small changes that on a global scale can make a massive impact. And I always just try and get these messagings through to my friends and family so that they don't feel overwhelmed by thinking they need to flip their whole lives upside down, but rather think, oh, just a second guess when they pick up that product or think to buy something. Can I get this from somewhere else? And it's just that small snap change that I think will make a huge impact.
And so often the changes do come from, one individual, one person that has this kind of passionate vision. What changes have you seen in your family? What kind of influence have you had on them? What have you noticed and gone, ah, yes, you can lick your finger and put it in the air to say, yes, I did it. Anything that stands out?
One thing I loved was my mum once took the initiative to buy an eco egg for the washing machine for washing clothes. So an eco egg is a product that effectively comes with a shell casing, and within there are refillable pellets. So you have an eco egg and it replaces things like laundry detergent, which are oftentimes so chemically pollutant, very damaging to the environment, and come in massive plastic casings. And they're just churned out every single day. And you don't realize that things like that you use so much. And when I saw this eco egg, I was like, wow, like that's great. And she took the initiative to buy it. I didn't even have to say anything. I was like, wow, my job here done. It's done.
Nice. Well done. Well done. And for those that are listening, if you want to find out more about a product like an eco egg, this is not an eco egg advert, but you can go to mygreenpod.com, which you know is my ethical lifestyle platform. And we've got recommendations on there for everything that you might want to consider transitioning from what's perhaps not so good for the planet and to something that could be much, much better. But as Neil has said, nothing's perfect. The ideal world is not to buy anything, is to try and grow your own food. I mean, it's, you know, it's there's no thing as eco perfection right now, Neil, is there? Do you think that we're moving into a time where the awareness and now the, you know, the big business movements and the political movements, I mean, I'm here at COP28. Do you think that there is a shift happening that is going to be in time and the kind of shift that we need?
I do, and I actually didn't before going to COP, which was a really interesting experience and realization for me on the ground. I think media plays a huge role, sorry, a huge role in swaying our mindset and the views we have regarding everything in the scope of our lives, but in particular reference to climate change. It even comes down to what you introduced the open of the radio show with the mention about how the narratives around COP28 and the presidency are being affected by, for example, Western media narratives. And prior to that, I think going to COP, I went with a sense of complete disappointment with the fact that we continue and continually are failing. And this is from a governmental level. And I was like, what are these delegates actually doing? But when we spent time with the Green Sheikh, for example, and we went out on a, so during the time in COP, one of the key messagings from the Green Sheikh, which is a man of action. And one thing I loved about that action was he was like, we're here and we're going to plant mangroves. So a team of us went out and we each planted two mangrove trees, 8 times more impact than any other comparable tree on the planet, and actively contributing towards the planet right there and then at COP28. And I was like, wow. Here he is, a delegate, someone who has the ability to make an impact on a huge global scale, as well as within the scale of the UAE. And he's passionate and he's pushing for it and he's getting other people involved in it. And I'm thinking, wow, the media actually does do you an injustice here, because I came in with a disappointing scope of going, we're being failed by people like you. And I was like, no, there is so much internal conversation that goes on where there are people hugely passionate about it. And it's about uplifting those voices as well, getting those people to be heard within their sphere as well, by these delegates, by the people that they want to make an impact for.
Yeah, beautifully said. And I absolutely wholeheartedly agree with you. I've been reading some of the news that's been going out, and I've been seeing some of the responses on the ground here, and some of the ways that you know, some of the ways that have perhaps tried to address, you know, what's happening around different parts of the world with different news stories. And of course, at the end of the day, these stories are really to sell newspapers, right? They're really to get people's attention. They're attention grabbers, they're headline grabbers. If you actually look into the detail of a lot of the things that are said, you could find a much deeper truth. So, Neil, thank you for that. We're going to cut to the next commercial break. After that, I'm going to come back and just really open up the conversation, play your next song, and get a little bit deeper. So, Neil, hold tight, and we'll cut to our second commercial break now.
The station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Neil, welcome back.
Hello, everyone.
So Let me ask you about if you were able to wave a magic wand, what would you make happen? What would the first thing that you would make happen?
Oh, wow. What are we talking? In the scope of the planet? Or
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
any bit
yeah.
more information?
Well, sorry, my apologies. In context of this issue we are experiencing with the climate crisis, biodiversity loss, over toxicity and pollution. Sorry, in relation specifically to the climate crisis.
Wow, with one, is it a one wish situation kind of thing?
Let's see what you can nail in one wish.
I would give people the innovations required to curb out things like global plastic pollution at our seas and maintain healthy waterways for biodiversity to thrive. I guess that falls in the same bit, hopefully.
That's magical. Beautiful, beautiful. I love that. See, you
took me a good second to think for that.
let's make sure you get that magic wand, because that would be fantastic. So what's next for you, Neil? What do you got planned for? We're getting close to Christmas, so I'm still in Dubai. You got back yesterday. We know there's a bit of snow in the UK, but what's happening now between, well, let's say 2024? What's lined up for you in the new year?
Wow, so next year is going to be a big year for me. I mean, fingers crossed it pans out the way that I hope it does, because I'm working on a lot of different impact projects to get the promotions and innovations and work of a lot of charities and partners that I have out there, really advocating for particular animal groups, some documentary work. And yeah, I'm really excited just to help push the momentum and change towards climate change, biodiversity, and the overall mindsets of people, rather than shift a bit more away from negativity towards positive impacts everyone can have.
Nice. And how do people connect with you? Like, what are the best ways that people can get to follow you and understand and tune into your messages? Is it a website or through social?
I do have a website, and I don't really use it that much anymore. I've lent way more into social media. They can find me on TikTok at Neil Zaver, at NELELZAVER, or on Instagram at FLUNKINGMONKEY, Flunking Monkey.
I love that name. I love the Flunking Monkey. And how do you, when I've obviously checked out your posts, I've obviously checked out the way that you communicate with your audience, and it's a significant following. How much time do you take preparing and planning what you're going to say and outreach to your followers?
Oh, hours. It's something that I am quite strenuous about, coming from obviously a scientific background. I previously worked in publishing, so having notable references and making sure the information I put out there is accurate is a big part of what I do. And I also want to make sure it's information that's relevant, that people would be interested in. And again, it falls back into this word impactful, and making sure that they'll leave the video or the post with something, and to hopefully gain something by me at least spending the time putting energy into that informative video or informative post.
Nice. I can tell you take time. I genuinely can. I mean, you see some posts that people have put up, and yeah, it's a bit kind of random, but yeah, well done. It's interesting as well to know, because, and how often are you messaging with your audience? Is it a daily cycle? Is it a more than once a day?
Oh, it's definitely multiple times a day. I have different followers on different platforms, always reach out, comment, sending me messages, and I love to converse with them, whether it's about, it could, I'm even open to discussing things, how I'm personally being affected by climate change, or even stuff about information that I've put out in a post, or interest in an animal, wanting to know how they can connect with organizations that are involved in their conservation, or where they can see a particular animal, or my experience within the sphere of scope of biology as well. Sometimes I get questions about when I'm next going out to work on a conservation project, for example, and if they can get involved and come and see me and things like that.
Nice, nice. Well, let's move to your second song. I mean, it's one of my favorite songs as well, but I'll let you announce it. So what's the second song that you've chosen and why?
I've chosen Somewhere Over the Rainbow. And this is a song that always resonated with me ever since I was a child. And it's actually a cover of the original version. Yeah, it always just filled me with so much hope and love for the planet. My brain would visually imagine meadows and oceans and waves cascading on cliffs as I played this song. And I hope it gives people the love for our planet as it did me.
Hey, this one's for Gabby.
Oh, such a beautiful, beautiful song. Well, how do you feel when you hear that song, Neil?
Oh, I feel uplifted. I feel connected. I feel joyful. It makes me, like I said, it sparks of creativity in my mind, and it just fills me with a lot of joy.
It makes me smile.
100%.
Yeah, as do you, my friend, as do you. I'm just remembering the times and the conversations that we had when we were here together. I'm looking forward to spending more time with you. We are coming, you know, to the latter part of the show now. What would you have liked me to ask you that I haven't asked you?
Interesting. I did have a line of thought regarding the fact that this is obviously UK Health Radio. I think oftentimes what tends to dominate the media is this idea that climate change and oceans rising and pollution and these effects it's having, we often overlook the cascade of effects it can have on our health and our bodies, in particular reference to food. I think often people don't realize that the nutrient density of food is going down internationally, and that's because climate change is causing significant amounts of drought and similar impactful events on food. And this nutrient density changes is leading to things like higher calorie foods with lower nutrients, which is actually leading to things like malnutrition, which then leads into other problematic areas. It's causing health effects in the availability of these essential nutrients, and it can affect people all around the world. It's not just limited to where these problems like drought are occurring, because they lead to adverse effects on water and food security. So it then leads to a cascade of effects of what's happening to the people there, where these foods are getting shipped out from. And then into other factors like what they then result in. So let's look at a drought-induced malnutrition in Africa, which will lead to potentially higher increments of wildlife crime. And alongside the wildlife crime, we're then going backwards in terms of causing food chain issues with both the environment and with us. There can be accelerated avian invasion into Mediterranean regions, which are causing the damage to food crops in successful harvests, because these invasive species will come and they'll eat these crops, leading to further lack of food and access to food in regions where they're already quite vulnerable. I guess one thing that I would love people to really start thinking more about is the cascade of effects climate change and is causing beyond the scope of what they hear about emissions.
Yeah, beautiful. Thank you. And I know that was, you know, just completely out of the wind, that question. So thank you for bringing that. I mean, it's clear to me that you are a significant and important personality, influencer. I don't know how you describe yourself, but But Neil,
I really wouldn't
I'm
say that. significantly important.
Well, you're an incredibly impressive young man. You've clearly done a lot. You are going to continue to do a lot. I'm hoping that our listeners will support you and follow your journey. And I'd just like to ask you if there's one bit of juicy wisdom that you'd like to leave with our listeners before we sign off. What would that be?
Don't think that you cannot make an impact.
I love it. Clear and concise. Don't think that you cannot make an impact. Neil, it's been an absolute pleasure having you. As I said, I'm very much looking forward to, you know, this is just the beginning, certainly for us to continue conversing and helping each other out and working together. So thank you for joining me today. I must just say, Neil, please forgive me for the bit of chaos at the beginning. To cut a long story short, for those that are listening, I was in a buggy with the Green Sheikh heading to the media center so I could have a quiet conversation with you guys, and was unable to get to the where I needed to be in time. So I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to UK Health Radio technical guys who were absolutely panicking behind the scenes because I wasn't available. So forgive me. Neil, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. And I would love if you would let me pose a question, if possible.
Please.
With the extra time that you've had at COP and the significant time that you've spent with the Green Sheikh and around the delegates, how do you feel the atmosphere at this year's COP28 is reflecting? And what do you think the biggest impacts from that will be in 2024?
It's a great question. People keep asking me that. And I love it. Thank you. So with my head answer, it's too early to tell. Most of the significant parts of the negotiations run literally right down to the last minute. But what I can say is this, is that having understood the culture here, having understood the way the UAE are significantly transforming lifestyles for people. Yes, of course, it's a wealthy country. Yes, of course, they've got lots and lots of money, and it's come from a predominantly driven from a fossil fuel environment. I can actually see that there is not only willingness, but there is a level of consciousness in everybody that I've met here that wants to create change that's fully in service to the whole. And I think that is the most important thing. If we are going to silo moments of change, that's not going to work. If we are creating change that's in service to the whole, then that is going to make a huge, well, massive, massive difference. So, Neil, thank you for asking me that. I hope that answers your question.
Yes, lovely. Thank you so much. And obviously, everyone listening today, feel free to reach out to me afterwards if you have any further questions or just to connect. I love connecting with like-minded people, and let's work towards saving this planet.
Now, Neil, you need your own radio show. I hope the UK Health team are listening. It's been a brilliant show. Thank you so much. We're going to, as always, end the show with the Save the World track by Jarvis Smith featuring Rita Mora. We're going to play this track. I hope you managed to put it to your playlists. You can download it. You can play it on repeat. Every single penny of royalty that I would get for being the performing artist on the track is being donated to Greta Thunberg's Fridays for Future, Most Affected People and Areas. We'll end with Save the World. Thank you very much. See you next week.